You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hi, welcome to today's episode of the Locked On Seahawks podcast. You are with Grant Goldberg and Spike Friedman, and we are very close to the draft. We are getting our draft hats on. We don't have the ones that say, like, we are 12 or whatever the new draft hats are. But anyways, you know, to give you a little insight on who we are, I'm Grant Goldberg. I do social media for Forum Blue and Gold, a website that covers the Lakers. I know it's a little weird, and we'll get into that later. And then I am joined by Spike Friedman. Spike, what do you do?
What do I do? When it comes to the Seahawks, I write about the Seahawks for Seattle's The Stranger. I've written about them for some other places, but if there's Seahawks news, I'll write about it in The Stranger, the least likely Seattle publication for you to find football coverage.
There you go. There you have it. Other work for me includes the Locked On Seahawks podcast, which you are listening to right now.
And right now,
you
it's happening.
A good episode to listen to.
The draft is very close, Grant. In 48 hours from right now, while we're recording this, probably 36 from when this goes up, the Seahawks will not have made a draft pick because they will have traded out of day one. But maybe, you know, Grant, maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe they'll have taken someone at this time. Thursday night. It's possible.
It's possible. They could make someone's dream come true, or they can just trade back like always, and you know, nobody will blink an eye. But the draft is actually on my girlfriend's birthday. And so, you know, it's become less of a spectacle for me throughout the years. I mean, you're gonna know who they pick regardless, and it's a little bit of a drawn out process. But you know, I'm excited for it. I'm anxious to see who goes where, what quarterbacks go to which place. And so it's going to be a lot of fun. And we both said many times on the show that we both think the Seahawks are going to trade back, like always. But we'll get into, you know, a couple questions. One of them has to deal with, you know, who is our dream player to draft at 18, or, you know, a dream player to draft early day two when they make their first pick. But we got a lot of stuff to talk about, right, Spike?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we're going to start with our number one Seahawks impression going into this draft. What do we think is absolutely crucial or different about this draft for the Seahawks? And for me, it is I listened to Pete Carroll and John Schneider's pre-draft press conference, and in it, they talked a great deal, especially Schneider, about how much smaller their draft board is this year than it has been in the past. And they talked about the fact that it had grown over the past couple of years because they had made excuses for guys to keep them on the board, and that had backfired. And it felt like a veiled reference, not so veiled, to the issues around Malik McDowell. And honestly, it felt a little bit like a reference to Frank Clark, yeah, in that they've been willing to go further back into that second round. I mean, Frank Clark was their first pick that year, and that was late, in order to take that one guy from the top tier of their picks that's left on the board and sort of glossing over some off-the-field factors. With Clark, obviously those off-the-field factors haven't affected his play with the Seahawks, yeah, but they are a moral compromise for the team that you don't like them making. And with McDowell, even though it's a fluky and tragic situation that he's in, again, he's the sort of guy who It was a weird sort of place to be picking him. He had top half of the first round talent. He had back half of the second round motivation. So they took him in the middle there and wound up making a pretty big mistake in ways they couldn't even see coming. But he was still a risky pick, even if he gets on the field. And what I think we're going to get this year that's different is, with a smaller draft board, honestly, And I think this comes down to them trading back. I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't trade back quite so far. And we'll talk about who our dream picks are later to be on the board at 18. But for me, I could see them really only going back to like 26 or 28 this year to make sure they're grabbing a guy who they both have a first round grade for performance, but also for health and character. And they aren't going to be able to find that guy at 35, 36 because they've sort of narrowed their class. And I just think this speaks to the fact that even though we talked about it last time with Mina, that Malik McDowell is not the biggest draft bust in Seahawks history. And that's because he wasn't drafted high enough to be that. We've drafted highly enough as a squad in the past and had some huge misses in Curry and Meyer. And Bosworth, those are the three that stick out as ones that are obviously worse picks just because of the value of the pick that was given up. But I think Malik McDowell is going to represent the biggest sea change in the Pete Carroll, John Schneider era in terms of roster construction, and that he's making them sort of rethink everything. And sort of the issues we've had in the past really came to a head with that selection. And we're going to see a change in philosophy, which is so rare for this team that is so entrenched in their philosophies.
Yeah, I listened to half of the John Schneider Pete Carroll press conference, but in the time that I did spend listening to it, one phrase that John Schneider said when he was talking about character concerns about players they drafted, and it kind of stuck out to me because I didn't expect him to put it this bluntly, but he said you kind of ignore red flags when it gets to, you know, how talented a player can be.
He almost said, I think at one point he said, make excuses.
Make
for
excuses
guys. Yeah.
To draft.
It absolutely, yeah, it hit my ear too.
Yeah, I thought it was just, it was harsh to the ear hearing that. And it caught me off guard, but when you look at, you know, the Frank Clarks that they've drafted and, you know, to an extent, Malik McDowell with his really weird run-in with the police, you know, which we can, you know, credit to maybe character or maybe, you know, injuries that he sustained, you know, affecting his brain. But that's something else entirely to get into.
Yeah.
But I think that it's a really big draft to, you know, have some continuity for the roster in the years coming because, you know, I was looking up and down Bob Condotta's timeline, and I noticed a piece from the Seattle Times that he wrote, and when it came to the 2013-2014 drafts, there's no players left on the roster from 2013, and Justin Britt is the sole player from the 2014 class. And so, you know, there's the question of, have John Schneider and Pete Carroll lost a step when it comes to drafting? And I think it's, you know, imperative that they get some players that can stick on the roster and create more of a foundation. Again, in the time that I listened to the press conference, Pete Carroll was talking about how they really need to get some young guys in to get the competition going and fight for these jobs and scrap and really just infuse some life into the program. And, you know, for all the criticism Pete Carroll gets, and I think Richard Sherman alluded to it a little bit by saying it's a little more like a college-esque atmosphere in Seattle. And that phrase popped into my head when I was listening to Pete Carroll talk, because he was using words like, you know, we need some young guys to come in here and scrap for the jobs, and use the term program, which is, you know, a normal term that he uses all the time. But it definitely seems like, you know, they need to get guys that are going to stick around for the long term, for the future, because when we look at it now, you know, the roster is so different from when, you know, they made the 2013 run. And so those drafts were important to kind of carry on that championship run, because in championship organizations, you know, you have your star players and they're going to come and go. That's fleeting. But, you know, having players to come in and step up after they leave that are on the roster that, you know, you acquire organically through the draft, that's really important. So if this team is going to, you know, be able to, you know, get into this contending, you know, group of teams in the NFC, they're going to need a lot of continuity in the roster and players that they can bring up and have that next man up mentality again.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. We can look at those 2013, 2014 drafts. I think both of those drafts, they did not have their first round pick. And it's, again, it's easy to take for granted how high the washout rate for even day two, but especially day three guys is. Once you're past the fourth round, the washout rate is so high. And we had such a great run of that in 2010, 2011, 2012 that to not have any of those guys hit for a couple of years is really killing us. We don't have any guys on the first year of their second contract right now. And those are the guys who you can most expect to make a contribution without breaking down. And, you know, it's, you're right. Like, we need to hit, and we need to hit with volume. And I think we're getting back on the right path. I mean, Justin Britt actually is in, I guess now he's in the second year of his second contract.
Right, now he is because he just extended it last year.
Yeah, yeah, because of the weirdness on how that all went. Clark is obviously a possibility for a second contract. Lockett could be as well. Richardson will get us a comp pick. I mean, it hasn't been all bad news.
No,
bad news. And then you look at last year, there's a lot of, I mean, Nas Jones, Keel Griffin. I mean, there's a lot of good
Jerron
talent.
Reed in the draft before that.
Yeah, it isn't dire.
No, and they've gotten back to it in drafting depth.
Yeah, and they're not hitting. It's that, like, I think, again, I'm like, I don't think they're going to try, like, and it's just a hunch, but I'm like, I don't think they trade back to day two. I think they pick up, like, a third rounder, and they pick in the mid to late 20s.
Well, I think too, because they talked about having a smaller draft board. If that player isn't there when they trade back, maybe into the later first round, they can do a situation where they trade back to the later first round and then they trade back again. But that's, you know, everything that I just said is part of the reason why I think they amass more picks on draft day, because, you know, like you said, they need to hit with volume and they have to get volume first. And so they need to acquire some picks. Because they have 8 picks in the draft so far.
Yeah. I'll also be interested to see if they do something where they package that one with, you know, some of those day three picks, because, like, they need day two picks. They need day two picks. They need day two picks. And, yeah, all right. I think that's a good sort of baseline for where we're at with the Seahawks. Let's take a quick break and come back and answer some questions from the internet. This is the Locked On Seahawks podcast.
We'll be right back. We are back with more Locked On Seahawks. You're with Grant and Spike, and I took to Twitter and asked for some questions so we can do a little mailbag. It's been a little while since we've, you know, talked to you guys and answered your questions, so we decided to, you know, cast a net out there, and we're going to read to you what we got and try to come up with the best responses we can. And so the first question is from @JasonCheehawks, a staple in Seahawks Twitter. He says, gun to your head, fire John Schneider or Pete Carroll?
And this is...
I don't know where I'm at on that right now. I'll let you start because I'm still forming an answer.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of an age question there. I mean, Pete Carroll, how much longer is he going to stick around? He's 300 years old.
Right.
He's the oldest coach in the NFL. John Schneider's very good. That said, who has a better track record of succeeding at what they do? In a lot of ways, it's Carroll. But you also know that Carroll's shtick can wear out with veterans. I think Schneider will be with the team longer. I'll say that. And so, that said, if it were for this season, it would be so disruptive to lose Carroll. No, it's still, I'm keeping John Schneider. I think he's bouncing back. I feel like John Schneider, I've got this sneaky suspicion he's an asshole. That's like, I don't know what that is, but like,
I'm
like,
it's his voice.
It's his voice. It's like his old school references. I don't know, man. Like, it's fine. He's like, I don't know. But that said, even in spite of that, credit where credit is due. Let's go. I'll keep Schneider around.
Yeah, I think for that reason where Pete's not going to stick around that much longer, I think.
And Pete's 300 years old. We talked about it.
Yeah. And you mentioned how, like, his thing is, you know, more for younger college guys. And I think, you know, I don't know where I'm at on this, but that could be part of the reason why there isn't so much roster continuity with older guys. But, no, it can definitely add to it. So I'm gonna take the easy answer, and I'm going to piggyback onto what you said and say that, you know, John Schneider has, you know, a proven track record as a GM. He has success in Seattle. And plus, if you fire Pete Carroll, Brian Schottenheimer probably goes with him. And
I thought you were going the other way with that. I thought you were like, well, they're going to have to promote Schottenheimer.
No, if it went that way, then I would totally go fire John.
Yeah.
Yeah, you had me on the list right there. I couldn't even know what I wanted to say. We're going to move on to the next question. It comes from Jacob Rude of Lakers Outsiders. And he asks a couple of questions. Who is the most irreplaceable player on offense and defense? What would be the best case scenario for the draft and the worst case? And do we miss Blair Walsh yet? First answer goes to the last question. I don't think we're ever going to miss Blair Walsh.
No.
I think you can closely associate the words Blair Walsh and miss. And that's the only connection.
Yeah, there. Yeah, no, okay. I don't. There's no way. Okay, yeah. So most irreplaceable player. I mean, like, the easy answer is Russ, and that's the right answer. Yeah.
And then defense. Like, you know, the only question is between Earl and Bobby, and I think, you know, still Earl is the more irreplaceable player, just because, you know, he allows the Seahawks to play like they do on defense, and he covers up so many holes when he's out there on the field. And but, you know, also when you look at when Bobby Wagner's missed time, the defense looked bad.
Yeah, I think it's increasingly Bobby, but I mean, not to wade too deep into this, but Bobby is influential in both the pass and run game, but it's really our run defense that falls apart when he's not on the field, whereas Earl, it's the pass defense that falls apart, and passing's more important than running, so Earl is less replaceable. But, like, it's really 1A, 1B with those two.
Yeah, I think
I'm most interested in the third part of this question. I want to move on. I don't. All right. It's the draft. It's draft season, baby. Who would be what's the best and worst case scenario at 18? Is that the question?
Yeah, best case scenario.
Best case scenario. So for me, the best case scenario is one of the big quarterback slides to 18. Rosen, Allen, any of, even honestly, Lamar Jackson being on the board at 18 is great. We see the premium the teams get when they give up their pick to a team picking a quarterback. And if you talk about a team like the Seahawks, potentially, you know, having two or three teams bidding for Lamar Jackson at 18, that's great. If it's Josh Allen or Josh Rosen, it's going to be even more. And you can talk about sliding back to the end of the first round and picking up a second, or picking up two thirds, or picking up a second and a third maybe, but it's a quarterback. Whereas if it's not a quarterback, you're not going to get that haul. So for me, the dream scenario is a quarterback slide to the Seahawks so they can really maximize the value of that pick.
All right, and so I'll take the worst case scenario, and I'm going to stick on the subject of quarterbacks, and I'm going to say the Seahawks trade Russell Wilson to the Browns so they can draft Josh Allen. That's the worst case scenario.
Oh, wow. What a bummer.
That's a back-breaking answer. We're going to move on to a little bit more of a happy question. Cameron McIntosh asks, why are you a Lakers fan? And I'm assuming this is directed towards me.
Not for me. I hate the Lakers.
Right, as many people do.
No, I want to be clear that I hate the... Even before the Sonics left Seattle, I hated the Lakers more than I loved the Sonics by the end. And that's personal to me, being a... I was a little kid and lived in Seattle through elementary school, then moved to LA, and was just like a diehard Sonics fan, and then the three-peat happened like in my face, and it was one of the more miserable experiences of my life. And it, what it did was it didn't build a love of the Sonics for me. It built a hatred for the Lakers that burns with a fiery passion. So, Grant, why do you like the worst team in the NBA?
Statistically, we're not anymore. off court, yeah. there can be an argument made. As long as I can remember, the Lakers have been my favorite team. I've grown up in a town 40 minutes north of L.A., and so, you know, my earliest memories watching sports were the Lakers. I think that I was a little young for the three-peat Lakers, but, you know, coming up and watching, you know, Kobe Bryant play the way that he played, and, you know, having, you know, one of the best players in the league on your team and growing up with you, I think it just solidified my bond with the Lakers. And, you know, I've grown to love, you know, basketball as a sport, but the Lakers have always, you know, been the mainstay in my sports life. They've always been my favorite team in the world. So, you know, I've embraced the kind of villain role when it comes to being an NBA fan. I think, you know, very few teams get to do that. You know, you have the Lakers, you have the Celtics. You can make an argument for a couple other teams. But, you know, yeah, I've always loved them. They've been my team since day one, since I've been watching sports when I was a little kid. So there you go.
Boo. All right, let's take a break on that horrify. It was very sweet, Grant, but also the fact that you're too young to remember the three-peat is crazy.
Well, all right, I was born in 97.
That's insane.
That's impossible.
It's impossible. It's impossible.
We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the final portion of today's episode of the Locked On Seahawks podcast. You're with Grant and Spike. And we have one more question that we're going to answer before we get into a little bit more draft talk after the question. It's, who would be your dream player to have fall to 18, taking out no-brainers like Barkley, Nelson, and Chubb? This is from Kyle Geller.
I guess we kind of answered this, but let's say who we'd pick there, I guess, if we stuck.
Yeah. Any player, you know, besides, you know, these players that are projected to go
through. Yeah, I mean, obviously the dream would be Nelson, but he'll be gone by the time the Bears pick at 8. I'll go with Marcus Davenport and Mike McGlinchey are sort of the obvious guys, in that Davenport's that edge rusher. He's freakishly athletic, sort of a Bruce Irvin type. McGlinchey's just second highest rated offensive lineman on the board. And would be able to sort of step in at right tackle day one and free us from the pain that is Jermaine Fetti at tackle, be able to move him back to guard, or be able to see, you know, have him and Fluker battle it out, and that'd be fine. So I think those are the two obvious guys. Again, I want a quarterback to slide. I want Josh Allen to slide. I want something weird to happen.
Yeah.
What about you?
I'll go with a little bit more of a sexy pick. This is a guy that was mocked to the Seahawks like really early in preliminary mock drafts, but has gained a lot of steam and is projected to go top 10. I'm going to go with Florida State safety Derwin James. I think that, you know, having depth at safety has been a question mark in Seattle over the last couple of years, although we do have Bradley McDougal now, but, you know, who knows about Cam Chancellor. And so, you know, having a guy like James out there who's, you know, long arms and, you know, a crazy frame and has, you know, a crazy nature out there on the football field, I think, you know, that's a Seahawk.
Real good. I mean, the heartbreaking reality is it's sort of Gift of the Magi where you have to trade Earl to get him. But I guess like the other potential is Vita Vea. But I don't think we need a D tackle. I think we need edge.
I think also, if they were getting a tackle, Maurice Hurst would be a knockout pick. I was talking about this last night to a couple friends, and I was saying, you know, credits to the Seahawks for drafting Jerron Reed and Naz Jones. But if they hadn't drafted one of those guys, Maurice Hurst would be the guy that I'm, you know, slamming home to pick at number 18. I don't know why he's projected to fall so much. He had those concerns at the combine with the heart testing, but, you know, everything checks out. It says he's fine. He was just such a disruptor in the middle of the field, and I think that, you know, whatever team's going to get him, they're going to get a really impactful player.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I didn't expect to come that hard with the draft analysis today, but
you did great.
Yeah, I think I did better than I thought I would. But Spike, you had one more thing related to the draft that you wanted to talk to before we close.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, how far back we trading, and who do you think we go with there? And I feel like I don't have the answer. I feel like I don't know yet.
All right, so here's my train of thought. I liked what you said about them trading back just deeper into the first and not necessarily day two. And so having a guy, you know, this is, you know, on the off chance that he falls, but say the Seahawks trade back to, you know, 25, 26, having a guy like Harold Landry on the board would be awesome.
Yeah.
To draft.
Yep.
We need that edge guy. We asked this question a couple weeks ago, but, you know, we need to know where these sacks are going to come from on the field, because yeah, there's not that one guy where, you know, that's the guy that's going to, you know, be a 10 sack guy. Or, I mean, Frank Clark has the ability to, but who knows if he takes a step forward this year. So, you know, Harold Landry would be a great pick in my mind in that 25, 26 range.
Yeah, I mean, man, I'm looking, because, like, they didn't work out Landry and they didn't work out Hubbard, who are sort of those end of the first round pass rush guys. So it's sort of like, I don't know.
There's also the idea that Mina actually brought up last week about them drafting a guard with Connor Williams from Texas and Will Hernandez, you know, Williams being that technical, solid guy you can slap in the middle and he'll, you know, he'll do well. And I think he's coming off an injury. And then you have Will Hernandez, who's just a tank, who's also a little bit technical. And so you can address a need in both of those avenues.
Yeah, and that's a great call. Because I'm thinking about Hurst, who the Seahawks did a private workout with, but with all the heart stuff and the way they were talking about health risk and not wanting it, I feel like he's going to be off their board. I feel like they're not going to take a risk there. I mean, maybe like, man, like Leighton Van Der Esch. I mean, that'd be crazy for them to put that at put those resources at linebacker right now. But he would fit the program. I'm like,
yeah,
just looking.
I mean, like, you look.
They've
got
a weird array of guys who they brought in. They always do this. Colton Miller. I wouldn't be shocked if like they ended up with a guy like Colton Miller. Honestly, offensive tackle out of UCLA. That would make a lot of sense if they can get that haul. They can go all line and know that they can get a second tier pass rusher and a running back and a corner in day two. But that requires, you know, someone slotting or something. Hey, look, this is all crazy. Guys, the answer is I have no idea. The fact that they're changing up their philosophy, they have new coordinators, we have no second and third round pick. It's all wild. It's all wild cards. I'm excited. I'm excited for us to not pick on Thursday, man.
There's so many avenues in which they can go. If they go the route of drafting Miller, if they trade back, then, you know, you can have that competition in camp where you put Miller at right tackle and you know, have a Fetty battle for the right guard spot with DJ Fluker. And so I think they like Ethan Posick. I think that he can have a spot on the line, especially since Luke Jokel's gone. But, you know, looking at this draft board and talking, you know, about this, you know, out loud, there are a lot of possibilities that the Seahawks can go with. If they stay at 18 and get one of those prime edge rushers or get one of those tackles, or if they trade back and try to do the same thing, it's going to be a fun story to watch. I think if the draft is worth watching for any reason, it's going to be seeing what the Seahawks do. And
hold on. I'm trying to see if they brought in Josh Sweat. That's a good answer. Oh, you can keep talking.
Yeah, I mean,
Sorry.
At first, I thought you were talking about Hayden Hurst from South Carolina.
I wasn't.
Yeah. But a tight end, too, is a position of need because
they have worked out Josh Sweat. I feel like they did two workouts with Josh Sweat. Oh, but he's got knee concerns. Mixed opinions. Oh, boy.
It's a red flag.
It's a red flag at the end. Ugh. Man.
I'm really sweating this pick.
Boy.
Yeah, I went there.
All right, let's end this.
I feel like we needed that little moment of silence for the dramatic effect. But we want to thank you for listening to this episode. It was fun to talk about the draft a little more. It's coming up fast, and we're going to see in a couple days whether the Seahawks get the edge rusher of the future or, you know, have to wait until day two to see who they get. But as always, go to iTunes, leave a review, leave a 5-star review. It's greatly appreciated. And reach out to us on Twitter or an iTunes review. Let us know how we're doing. And we appreciate you guys tuning in.
Yeah, love you guys.
Love.
So strong. Yeah. You know what? I do. I love you guys.
You know what? John Schneider was using strong words in the press conference, and so I think that we just need to replicate that, but with a more positive emotion. So, yeah, we love you guys. We're sending out love for listening to our show. So make sure you leave that review because we haven't gotten one in a long time. All right, so for the Locked On Seahawks podcast, I am Grant Goldberg signing off.
And I'm Spike Friedman also signing off.